30 minutes to speak, and then I'll give you a 5-minute warning. Thank you.
My name is Adrian, and I'm an addict. First of all, I want to thank the Northern Arizona Convention of Narcotics Anonymous for allowing me to, you know, share my experience, strength, and hope with this convention, first annual. And that's like, it's like a really big honor, you know. I was at the barbecue, and some of the guys came up to me and telling me that they wanted me to share. And I was like, wow, I got pretty emotional just thinking about it, you know. And it's like a big honor, you know. I want to thank my higher power for another day clean. It's through his grace and mercy that I stand here among you guys, you know. It's a beautiful day, man. You know, I woke up and, you know, I showered, you know. And, you know, even though it's not Friday, you know, but it's the topic today is on recovery and relapse. Yeah, I when I like share, you know, I really don't plan anything or write down anything, and you know, get everything organized, like notes and all that. And what I do is I rely on my higher power. You know, just like when I prayed this morning, I asked my higher power to speak through me today. And hopefully, you know, I know he's here, you know. I know that my higher power is present in my life today because, you know, I'm standing before you guys clean, you know, and serene, you know. And that's the big part, you know, is like, you know, I remember the days when I was abstinent. I've done that before. You know, and, you know, the basic text talks about it, you know. You know, people with, you know, that have years of, you know, clean time, you know, and decide to, you know, that it maybe not a meeting today, or maybe not a meeting tomorrow or the next couple of weeks, but, you know, it's like it comes down to how I feel and what I'm going to do about my recovery, you know, because I know for me that abstinence does not work, you know, and my last relapse just proved to me, you know, how powerful this disease is. You know, I did 179 days, and right before, you know, the day before my 6-month key tag, you know, I decided to pick up, you know. I'm from Phoenix. My home group is Without Reservations, Group of Narcotics Anonymous. We meet every Sunday from 12 to 1:15. We just opened up recently. It's like probably our fifth Sunday that we're open right now. I'm going to be missing my home group today. Starts in about 20 minutes, but I think they're going to be okay. My home group member has a broken leg, so she's going to be carrying all the literature. So I kind of feel bad about that, you know. Yeah, my clean date's November 3rd, 2004. You know, I say that out of humility. I'm not trying to be better than anybody. All I know is that that's a long time considering the way I use, you know. I grew up in Northern Arizona. I'm originally from Tuba City, Arizona, up on the Navajo Nation, and you know, growing up on the reservation, it was pretty crazy, you know. And you know, there's a lot of violence, and there's a lot of abuse, and there's a lot of, you know, the addiction. And I grew up around it, you know. I remember coming home and coming home from school, and all my stepfather's stuff were on the front yard. I remember one incident where his cowboy hat was on the in the front yard, and the boots and his bag, and I was thinking, man, this is kind of embarrassing because I was walking home with with my neighbor, so and that's pretty much how it is, you know. It's a I don't really have a drug lock today. You know, I did in early recovery, but, you know, today it's more, you know, I focus more on the recovery process, you know, moving forward, because I'm pretty sure everybody in this room knows how to pick up and use. I know I do. You know, I, my first drug was at 9 years old, and it was a love affair all the way up till I was about 32 years old. You know, I just couldn't stop. You know, and I tried all these different methods, like it says in the basic text. You know, it talks about how, you know, switching, you know, well, for me, it's like switching from different, like, complete abstinence or just one particular drug. You know, only with friends, without friends, you know, only on Fridays, you know, or Sunday afternoons during football, you know. I went up to my room earlier and I was going to flick on the game and I forgot it was Saturday, you know, and I was going to watch some football for a little bit. So my self-esteem is what brought me into active addiction. You know, I felt less than. I didn't feel that I was, you know, like the other people. Everywhere I went, I didn't fit in. I didn't fit in everywhere I went. You know, we go to different social events up on the reservation. You know, was either, you know, the kids of my age were younger or they were way older than me. You know, the younger kids are, you know, over there playing with their crayons, and then the older kids are over there smoking cigarettes, and I just decided to hang out with those people. You know, I was reading some of the literature. You know, it says that one of the ones that I like is that we can never fully recover no matter how long we stay clean. Complacency is the enemy of members with substantial clean time. If we remain complacent for long, the recovery process ceases. The disease will manifest apparent symptoms in us. Denial returns along with obsession and compulsion. You know, it's, you know, like, for me, all these negative feelings that I've had my whole life, you know, through active addiction, you know, it's like, that's all that I know. That's the only thing that I know in my life, you know, is how I feel, you know, the guilt, the shame, the anger, and the resentments. You know, there's nothing, you know, I remember prayer, you know, to smudge with some medicine. It didn't cure me from, you know, all these negative feelings that I had. You know, it wasn't until I started to dig into, you know, the step where that I come to realize that, you know, I think I'm going to be all right. You know, I'm a survivor of suicide. You know, my first suicide attempt was in 1998. And apparently I lived, you know. And the next one was in 2001. So that basically would give you an idea of where my disease took me. It took me to a point in my life where I didn't care about anyone or anything, including myself. My two hands were my worst enemies, and I was so fearful of those two hands. Because, you know, oh God, I remember when I woke up one morning, that morning, in 1998, and I just said, I'm going to die today. And I proceeded my day and not told anybody what I'm going to do or what I'm about to do. And I continued to drink beer at the swimming pool in Mesa. And when it was that time, you know, I grabbed two Budweisers, put them in my back pocket, and I carried one in my hand, and I said, I'll see you guys later. You know. Today, it's not like that, and it's like what I was saying earlier. You know, I woke up this morning, and I was like, damn, it's cold outside. That's what I was thinking. And can't believe I'm in Prescott, you know. And wow, I got a bed, you know, and woke up in a bed, little rollout, one of those fold-out beds, you know, and I haven't made my bed in years, and this morning I made my bed. Can you believe that? Out of respect for my roommate, you know. You know, the basic text, you know, it talks about, you know, the relapse. You know, I'm not Mr. Basic Text verbatim guy, whatever, you know, but it says, you know, a jarring experience, you know, which brings, you know, the relapse to be a jarring experience that brings about a more rigorous application to the program. My last relapse when I, in 2004, so I went through a residential treatment center and I graduated. So that was 90 days of a little security, right? A little structure in my program. And then after that, I went into a halfway house, which was great because, you know, they loosened the leash a little and, you know, I get a phone and, you know, I get to go run around and you know, and I relapsed. You know, and so I now I'm homeless again. You know, I was homeless for a lot of years. And so, you know, when I I remember on November 2nd, 2004, I was walking down 9th Street in San Francisco. You know, and this guy connived me into going into detox, right? And it was like, first of all, I just wanted to get $2 to get myself a 24-ouncer to get started. And next thing you know, I'm walking down to detox with his arms around me and telling me everything is going to be okay. And I'm crying. I've been crying a lot for the past few days. Past 3 days, man. And a lot of these tears that I'm crying are actually tears of joy, of gratitude, because, you know, it's like, you know, that COVID thing is a very scary thing. You know, to have a scare like that with me is one thing that that just basically freaks me out, you know. So Thursday I got a call and with a test result and it was negative. And it was crazy. Back home, it's really bad, actually. you know, in chapter 7, it talks a lot about, you know, some of the things like, you know, for me, I continue, you know, I try, you know, it's like, you know, I'm going to try to continue these steps. You know, I'm currently on the fourth step with my sponsor. You know, I'm in my feelings, you know, and don't really want to be, but, you know, it's where God put me today. So, you know, last night I was like, I'm going to do some step work. Next thing you know, I'm asleep. And that's what happened. You know, I'll be honest, you know. I was going to do some writing and some of these questions, right? All those questions, it's like, ugh. If you relapsed and you came back, you know, welcome. If you want to get loaded today, welcome. If you use today, I want to say welcome. Welcome to a new life. Just keep coming back. That's the only thing that kept me coming back was you people. Because I remember when I was out there getting loaded, I remember, oh, they'll be here for me when I get back. Hold on, I'll be right back. Just one more, right? Just one more. I'll be right back. It's not right back. It's like I gotta go do a job and then I gotta get this and that and then it's off another circus. You know, and what is it, chapter 'New Possibilities Arise'. I know it's on page 91. It says, there are no model of the recovering addict. When the drugs go and the addict works the program, wonderful things happen. Lost dreams awaken and new possibilities arise. Our willingness to grow spiritually keeps us buoyant. When we take the actions indicated in the steps, the results are a change in our personality. It's in our actions that are important. We lead the results to our higher power. God dang. You know, the thing that attracted me to Narcotics Anonymous is the literature. You know, I love the literature. You know, I hurt my basic text. It got wet down here. And it's all bloated now. And but I just realized, you know, it's kind of jacked up, but it still works. Like me, you know. So, you know, it's a good thing, you know. I remember getting back to what I was saying is I'll be right back, right? I remember sitting in the back of the room right by the door, you know, seeing all those happy people, you know, enjoying their lives and talking about their new car and their new family, and they're closing on a house. Damn it. You know? And get by in their second car. All this junk, right? And I was sitting in the back, and I would think, you know, ain't no way you could be this happy if you've been through what I've been through. And the resentments would grow within me, just sitting in the room, watching all these happy people. You know, and then, you know, I remember my friend Stacy out in the Bay Area. And she's like, I remember a time when you could not stay in a meeting. That's what she says. She still says that to me when I celebrate an anniversary. And I couldn't stay in an entire meeting because it's like I would get to the parking lot and I would see somebody's car and I'm not going in. I don't know if anybody can relate to that, you know. And Friday night, San Francisco, Crocker Amazon, you know, and I'm getting all souped up. I'm creasing my clothes and putting on my best shirt. I'm going to the meeting. I get to the meeting and see somebody smoking right there. Oh, man, I ain't going. I'm cool. I'll go to the bagel meeting tomorrow, you know, which is at 11 on Saturdays. I missed the Bay Area. I got clean in San Francisco, this place called the Friendship House. You know, and November 2nd, 2004, I got some rest. On November 3rd, my clean date, I called my counselor and I told him I wanted to come back. And he asked me that famous question that I heard my whole life: what are you going to do differently? You know, and this time, you know, without hesitating, I told him, you know, I said, I'm going to get a sponsor. I'm going to go to meetings and I'm going to work steps like those people, you know. You know, I didn't like those people. Yeah. You know? All those happy people that are having a good time and, you know, acting like there's nothing wrong. Yeah, right. You know, they're jacked up and they probably get in the car and start yelling and whatnot, you know. You know, there's another part that I wanted to share about. You know, it's on, we come here powerless, and the power that we seek comes to us through other people in Narcotics Anonymous, but we must reach out for it. And I like it where it says we must, because, you know, it's like I was one of those people that did not reach out to people, you know, when I was trying to do this, because I figured, you know, I'd be all right. You know, I just got to not use. I just don't want to use. I just don't need to use, and then I'll be fine. You know, but then again, the resentments and the anger is always popping up, always comes back. And then that turns into a big old mess in my head. And that's when I get loaded. I remember, I was talking to my sponsor and, I learned a new, character defect recently, you know, and, you know, and it's funny too, and it's kind of hilarious. And but the funny part is that it's true. And he said, "You're in avoidance," and I was like, "What?" So I tried to get back on the topic. He says, "Nah, we ain't gonna talk about that right now," you know. And so we haven't discussed it yet. You see this, man? This is a real smile today. I remember when I was so suicidal and I just wanted to die with this smile. Hey, what's up? Hey, you know? And today it's like a genuine smile, you know? I lost my mother January 3rd, 2013. Talk about the worst day of my life. My mom would be sitting right here. Is she still around? She's still around. Her spirit's around. I almost got loaded. 9 years clean. And, I did everything that an addict shouldn't do, is not responding to the phone calls, not going to meetings, and not listening to any suggestions, including my sponsor at the time. You know, and, you know, I tell you, service is what saved my life in 2013. Because my mom left in January. In November, I was asked to speak at the meeting I was talking about, the one on Friday. And I was supposed to speak in the last week of January. And I'm like, oh, dang it, you know. And I said, okay, you know. And so all these things, like planning, get a hotel room, get all these things, right? And I'm just grateful that I'm a lazy addict, too, because it's pretty tough to get stuff and get ready, you know. And then I remembered I was supposed to speak, man. And I was like, damn it, this ruins everything. And that's when I decided to call my sponsor. And we ended up going to a meeting, and we did what we do. And I lived. 7 years later, I'm still clean, in recovery. And that just proves to me how powerful, you know, the fellowship is. You know, the step work, you know, five things that they told me to do, right? Get a sponsor, go to meetings, work the steps, be a service, and get a home group. Don't really have a service commitment today, but I have I am a service in my home group. Not today, though, but don't tell anybody, you know. But, you know, it's like, it's a beautiful day. You know, it's just want to say welcome to everybody. I could throw all these words on the floor, right? And you could pick up the ones and take them home with you and leave the rest. My name is Adrian. I'm an addict. Thank you.
Thank you for speaking, Adrian. Let's give him another round of applause. Thank you. Great. I am pleased to announce our second speaker, Mark. I'm not too sure where you're from.
Tucson.
Tucson. Mark from Tucson, Arizona.
Oh, shit. Where'd y'all come from? It was only 20 people I was looking at for the last half hour. Good morning, everybody. My name is Mark, and I am an addict. Tucson, Arizona. I guess I would thank the committee, but Tommy is the one who asked me to fill in, and I really want to thank Tommy from Tucson. And I really want to thank everybody who's involved in putting on this convention, because it's been a real good time for me. It's been very healing. I always look forward to conventions. My lady and I go to them when we can, and they're rejuvenating, you know. Very empowering. It's where I get fed. Meetings, regular attendance, working with others, that's a big part of my recovery. But it's just great to come to a place where I could put my hair down, man, and like be an addict amongst addicts and get fed. And hear the language of the heart and the love. And COVID's trying to get between that, and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of discussion around that, and that's fine. So thank you to everybody that's persevered, and plenty of opportunity to, like, not come or not get involved or to stay separate from your fellows. And I went through that when Tommy asked me. Tommy's one of these guys that I've seen at conventions in different parts of Arizona, and he's just one of these guys in the shadows. And when you go, if you're involved in Narcotics Anonymous and you go to these places, you're going to see people like him, man, and they just do their thing. You know, and when I thanked him, he was like, yeah, no worries, man. I've got ways of doing this, you know. And so it's that willingness to service, right, to step in. Step up and A lot of people have your workshops and your speakers have had to cancel for traveling. I'm not your California guy, and I don't need to be. So there's just been a way of filling the gaps, man, and so it's this is not something that I'm seasoned at doing and don't need to be. Recovery and relapse, and when Tommy asked me, I was like, oh, that's easy. I got introduced to the rooms, man, back in 86, and that's not my clean date, you know. Wow, insidious disease, man. I got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous before I wanted to get clean, straight up. And I thought that it was a real interesting fellowship. Wasn't willing to trust anybody. But when they talked about total abstinence and these sorts of things, I was like, oh, shit, that's why my sister went to treatment for 9 months, you know. And that's how I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous in Virginia. And exposure to her. But it planted a seed, you know. It planted a seed that started to interfere with my using later on. Before I get further along, I want to thank Narcotics Anonymous for a lot of things, but there's men that I sponsor that are in this room, and Narcotics Anonymous is not the only fellowship I've attended to this point, you know. And I really want to thank Narcotics Anonymous and my God, because my journey, right? Kane picked up a white key tag. Everyone clapped. I got a sponsor. I had a spiritual awakening. Happy ever after. That's not my story. It's just not my story. You know, when I got to the rooms, it was an introduction, man. And I can look back at this point and see that I needed that introduction, because I wasn't one of these guys that just was willing to become part of the herd, man. You know, narcotics did something for me that I could not do for myself. And narcotics also gave me permission to do things I normally wouldn't do. You know, and that tool of navigation was something that I carried in all aspects of my life. And it took a lot of convincing that I was an addict. For real, for real. It was easy to say I was an addict when I was in trouble. Right? It's my alibi, you know. And so this is a little bit of a literature study in a sense for me, because it's it helps keep me grounded, man. And a big part of my job, I think, is to just be an extension of the literature as it's affected me. And as I work with others, I try to transmit that, because I don't want to try to convince a guy of something. I want to be able to show a man something once he's convinced himself. You know, and that's where that third tradition is absolutely essential, man, because it gave me the permission to come and go as I needed to come and go. It gave me the permission to come in and out of these rooms. And like our previous speaker said, you know, welcome. Welcome if you're using. Welcome if you're new. You know, absolutely. If you've had an awakening of these steps, and you're here today and you work with others, I want to say thank you. Absolutely. Whether I know you or not, I want to thank you for being part of this fellowship and for saving the lives of others, because that's the only reason I'm here. November 10 of 1996 was not a good day. You know, it was not a good day. I woke up with plenty of, and I couldn't use any more. I'd been to AA, I'd been to NA, it doesn't stop there. I've been to the churches, I've been to the synagogues, I've been to Miami where I was raised, and then I went to Northern Virginia, and I've been to Southern Virginia, and I've been to Northern Maryland and Southern Maryland, and I've been up and down the Eastern Seaboard, because it's going to be different, you know. It was that always thing of being different. You know, I didn't want to be one of you because you guys had accomplished something that I couldn't, you know. And this thing about addiction of getting clean and staying clean, look, man, staying clean is the easiest thing in the world if you don't want to use, you know. But I lacked the power necessary to stay clean when I wanted to use, you know. And because of that, I felt like a failure because you were staying clean and I couldn't. You know, Narcotics Anonymous isn't a fellowship of I thought this was about bad people getting good, you know, and I didn't know it was about sick people getting well, you know. I didn't know what the disease of addiction, that was a weird thing, man, you know. A disease. What do you mean, a disease? You know, a man told me one time, he's like, look, man, it's how do you know someone's got the chicken pox? I'm like, it's easy. You see the bumps all over them, right? Yeah. How do you know an addict is an addict? You know, he can't stay clean when he wants to and puts forth his best effort. His own willpower fails him. You know, so it's the natural state for an addict is to run around getting high, doing what he does or she does, man. And that's fine. And that was fine for me until I wanted it to be different and it wouldn't change. You know, being an addict was like a cool thing in the 80s, you know, kind of, but not really. Not when you wanted a job. I started using at 11, man. You know, so it was like I got arrested on Fort Lauderdale in high school, and the only thought, I saw my peers across the street. They're like, what the hell? What happened in the Mark over there? And they're locking me up, and I'm thinking, finally, street cred, you know? Like, I know that's insane, but it makes sense, you know? Because to my own devices, I couldn't see the value in myself, you know? I always came up less than. I always came up not enough, not good enough, not tall enough, whatever the case is. I always came up not enough, you know. Today's a beautiful day. It's a day of miracles, man, you know, and we're all proof of that. We're all proof of that. Started out my morning with coffee, the regular stuff, and the JFT, and then went for a walk, and thought there was a trash truck, and I thought, wait a minute, trash on Saturday? And they're like, no, dude, man, that's a fucking moose over there, man. Oh, shit. Right, Prescott, we're not in the city anymore. It was awesome. You'd think I'd know that, you know. I used to live in the woods. I got boring pretty quick. So today, you know, I just still want to stay on this topic a little bit. Like, I'm clean because of another man who knew 12-step work, you know, and he showed me how to take my first step, and he was successful with other addicts. And today he turned 30 years clean, you know, today, right here, right now. He's in the meeting. Jacksonville, Florida. You know? And I thought about that a little bit more, and it was like, when I thought about it, I didn't have interruptions of my mind, and I text him because I know what he's doing, okay, and I'm talking with him later. I'm grateful for your past failures, which turned out to be some of your best assets. I'm alive because someone gave you a message that you so freely gave me. And that's language of the heart for me. I know, in all humility, what I deserved if life were fair, you know, from the things that I did, the things that I regretted, the harm that I caused others. I'm real clear, you know, and I've heard it said many times, thank God I didn't get what I deserve, you know, the gift of mercy, you know, driven by desperation and the love of the fellowship and the guidance of others. And so, you know, in coming to rooms in 86, there was a period of time, in and out, Arlington, Virginia, Washington, D.C. I'm going to meetings. I'm not staying clean. I want to stay clean, I think. I'm an addict until I change my mind, and then I'm getting loaded, and I'm chasing, and I'm running out, and then I'm like, no, it's time to get clean. And then I rebound, and it was like this basketball with a slow leak. You know, and year after year after year, man, this thing's just losing the ability to rebound, you know, and I'm just not coming back. And my wits and my ability and my self-esteem and my drive and my desire for life is slowly fading, you know. And it was this this collaboration of bottoms through many of bottoms, you know, and I came into the rooms in November of 96 and up and down the Eastern Seaboard, and I just didn't want to get clean anymore. I just knew that if I sit here for 1 hour, I don't have to listen to the voices in my head, the sense of impending doom like a sword hanging from a thread near a candle. Something terrible bad was fixing to happen. I just didn't know when. And it wasn't just when I was using. It was when I was clean. It was whether I was at home or whether I was at your house or his house or her house. The only time it went away was in a meeting. You know? And I had tried. Man, I got enough white key tags to build a drag bike. You know? And I finally learned that the power isn't in the key tag. You know? It's a symbol for me to hold on to in between meetings to get to the next one, you know. Many people think that recovery is simply a matter of not using drugs. They consider a relapse a sign of complete failure and long periods of abstinence a sign of complete success. We in the recovery program of Narcotics Anonymous have found that this perception is too simplistic, and that's the way I saw things. I didn't know I was dealing with. I heard about the disease. I didn't understand the disease and the demoralization that would take place in my soul and my spirit. I was a failure. And then the people with time were of success, and I wouldn't or couldn't measure up. And then when I saw their faults, they talked shit about a waitress after a meeting. Whoa, the fuck am I getting into? You know? See, I'm awfully fragile as a new person, man. And I'm full of judgment, you know. Whether we should or shouldn't, that's the way it is, man. I got to judge you to know what's up. I don't just give up the language of the... My self-will kept me alive, man. Self-will run riot kept me alive. And you come to Narcotics Anonymous, that will not keep you clean. And unless you know that, it's a tool that you go with and forge every day, every day, every day. I know what I need. I know what I need to do. Don't fucking tell me what I got to do. I got this. You get it? And so we dress it up with the disease around the corner, that sort of thing. And what's really going on is I just don't understand about mental obsession, physical compulsion, and self-centeredness. You know? And what happens in a short period of time is this cockiness returns. And then what I did was separate myself from you. Because y'all kept asking me some shit I didn't want to answer. You know, how you really doing? What? What the fuck are you talking about? Excuse me. We take the first step. We admit that we are powerless over our addiction, that our lives have become unmanageable. Slowly things get better. And we start getting our confidence back. Our ego tells us that we can do it on our own. Things are getting better, and we think we really don't need this program. Cockiness is a red light indicator. Red light indicator. The loneliness and paranoia will come back. We find out that we can do it on our own, and things get worse. You know, and so I'm living in St. Simons Island, Georgia. I'm getting clean, and because of judgment and whatever inconsistencies in the fellowship. Man, my book tells me that, you know, politics make good bedfellows, you know, and what I've learned from that is, man, we're all here from somewhere else. We are all here from somewhere else, man, and we're people that like normally wouldn't mix. And so we all come from different experiences and different language and different accents and different geographics, and how we do things are different, you know, and the literature gives us a page to go to where we can all get together and get on the same page on addiction, you know, and we could focus on addiction instead of, you know, the name thereof, right? Because I'll separate myself from you because what I did and what you did and who is, you know, that's that street language. And the masks have to come off, man. The masks have got to go. And so I'm in the rooms and I'm going to meetings and I'm feeling good. And I'm like, maybe I was making too much out of something, man. Maybe the shit wasn't really that bad. I mean, like, really, come on, look. 50 days, you know, colors back, holding food down, you got a job, you know, but I really like that girl and she don't notice, and I'm going to the gym and I'm going to the gym and I'm going to the gym. Then I get the idea. I need to go to the gym a lot, man. And so I got this 84 Jeep CJ7, and I've got a generator in the back and a microwave in the back. I've got potatoes in the front seat, boxes of carbohydrates, you know, you know, this is before cell phones, man. And it's like, you know, where you been? You know, I got shit going on, man. I got a lot to do, you know. Yeah, man, but I went to treatment and they talked about the healing aspects of the body and what happens and all this stuff. And I'm just helping that shit along, right? But what's happening is I'm overcompensating, you know. I don't feel like you look, and I need to change that, you know, and I don't know how to change that. I'm going to meetings, but things aren't really changing, you know, and I feel the sense of vulnerability is a risk because on the streets it's a risk, you know, and the pain got me here, but now the pain's going away and the fear isn't keeping me here. You know, and nothing's changed in my spirit or in my thinking, you know, and I'm hearing about these steps and I'm like, yeah, God, if God knows I'm here, I'm in trouble, man. And that went on for a long time. And I found that driving around in my Jeep with a generator and a microwave and going to the gym every day was like a lot of work. And it was just like one day I thought, you know, fuck it. Man, this is expensive, you know? And I went right to the bar, and I bought a bunch of cigarettes and started smoking again. And then I'm drunk, and then I'm drug-seeking, and, you know, and then it's another 9 months. It's another 6 months. It's another year, you know? And the demoralization that comes from the failure of trying to get clean and not being able to stay clean. You know, I was not willing to walk in here and just like join you. Oh, man, I needed you, but I wasn't willing to join you. I mean, there were guys that actually had sponsors and they called them every day. And then they'd meet their sponsor a couple times a week. And then they'd get together on the weekends and even do step work. You know, and I didn't see myself. I didn't want to be that guy because of what I thought that was weak. You're a failure, you know. And I still had a lot to learn, man. I still had a lot to learn. I just thought that I could do this on my own without doing some of what you guys talked about. I was damn sure I'll do the first step. Okay. I wasn't going to do no fifth step. I ain't a rat. You don't understand. If you stay alive long enough and you're an addict, you know, that might be an attitude that needs to change. I know it did for me. Can Complacency is the enemy of members with substantial clean time. If we remain complacent for long, the recovery process ceases. The disease will manifest apparent symptoms in us. Denial returns along with obsession and compulsion. I think the previous speaker might have touched on this, and I apologize if he did, but I need to step on this a little bit, because there was the event of getting clean, and then there's the process of staying clean and what we do. And I did well at that for a period of time, man. Did real well, and I got very, very excited. And for the first time in my attempts to get clean, I got approached by a man, you know, and he started showing me what we did between meetings, you know, and I started to get relief, and I wanted more of that, and I wanted more of that. And in a short period of time, I was making amends to the ones that I didn't want to, you know, and it absolutely changed the way I thought. It absolutely changed the way I felt, and I was starting to identify with you more about the relief from addiction. And this freedom and this happiness started to come in, and then the ability to look at self was something I was more curious about, because I knew every time I got with my sponsor and we sat down and did step work, I felt better. And this was helping me at work, and I wasn't getting fired. And the years start to go by, and at 15 years clean, I'm going to my weekly, and the guys that I sponsored, you know, they're doing okay. They're getting along. And there's this doctor, and because of recording, I'll leave it like that. He's on TV from time to time, man, and he starts talking about the value of red wine to men that are 40 and over, right? And so, you know, I got clean in November of 96, and I was 29 getting ready to turn 30, man. And, you know, so now I'm staying clean. I'm over 40, and I'm like, I don't know if this is normal or not, man. Do you feel like this on certain days? You know, and it's just some of the rhetoric that guys talk about. You know, we start talking about a lot of things when we get over 40, right? And I'll leave it like that, right? So he's talking about, you know, the value of red wine, and I'm thinking, well, shit, I ought to try some of that. I mean, come on. I've been clean a long time. It'll be all right. I know what I'll do. I'll get a bottle of red wine, and I'll pour it in the plastic containers and label it Mark's Medicine. You know? Like, the lady I'm dating at the time, she's been clean a long time, or absent a long time, call it what you will. I look back at that now and go, yeah, we both could have improved. For sure. And I don't want to be offensive. I don't want to, I mean, like, shit, I've been clean a while. Like, this isn't going to be good. Right? Like, how does this work? How do you drink wine and stay clean? Right? And so, you know, at 15 years, I'm not in the literature. I talk to my sponsor on holidays. You know, I'm doing pretty good, you know. And that was like a Tuesday or a Wednesday, and I go to my weekly on Thursday, and I meet this guy I never met before, man. And I'm talking with him after the meeting, and he squared me up. I voiced to him, you know, what was going on in my mind. And he talked to me about 12-step work and the dedication behind 12-step work and the willingness that's necessary behind 10, 11, and 12, and that it's not done after work or before work. It's done when the phone rings, you know. I needed that narrative. I needed that. Look, man, I'm just going to put it like this. We spoke, it was November, and it was after midnight. It was a 7 o'clock meeting, and we were outside the whole time, and we got real acquainted with one another. And I was going to punch this dude in the neck, straight up. And the reason was is he was calling me out and pulling my covers, man. And I needed every bit of it. There's no way I'd be in front of you here today if he didn't do what he did. And I never would have taken time out of my life to sponsor the men that are here today and have the relationships with them that I do. There's absolutely no way that I would be in a relationship that I am with a woman in recovery the way I am with her today, to have the patience and the tolerance and the willingness and the humility necessary to take a look at values and principles instead of just what I'm getting from you. You know, so the breakdown of structure of self must begin and continue. That complacency, right? Like, I love the way this man says it at a meeting back home. He says, time in is not time well. That means you. And it gave me permission to, like, fucking sit down, man. Sit down. Be a spoke in the wheel. You know, don't stand out. Be very careful with that, bro. You know, because my head wants to overcompensate. You know, I need to overcompensate for the weaknesses that I perceive in myself. And this shit's spiritual, man. It's not physical. And the strength that I need is inside me, not on the outside of me. You know, the courage that I need is to look at self so that I can get along with my fellows, so I can get out of the way to help another addict get clean. And if that wasn't done for me, I wouldn't be here. And my gratitude is in that it's not being up here at the podium, but it's in approaching new men. You know, in approaching new men. It is not shameful to relapse. The shame is in not coming back. We must smash the illusion that we can do it alone. That explained 10 years of failure for me. Coming and going from the rooms, man. You know, that I tapped on earlier. You don't get it, man. I ain't like you. You don't get it. I ain't like you. If you had the life I had, if you were beaten on a daily the way I was, you wouldn't fucking sit here and say that shit. You know, that hurt. That absolute pain from the soul that nothing could touch, you know, but narcotics. And I don't care what form, man. I really don't. You know, the whole experimentation between alcohol and hard drugs and light drugs and marijuana and cocaine and heroin, I mean, it's irrelevant. You know, that's just irrelevant. The dying is from the inside out, not the outside in. And I learned some things that I didn't really want to. I just had to succumb to some concepts, man, that we have to keep our recovery first and our priorities in order. You know, and for me, that shoots me back over there to page 57, where at the bottom, we learned that our program won't work when we try to adopt it to our life. We must learn to adopt our life to the program. And my recovery brothers and sponsor was like, look, man, I had to recreate my life. This is a society within a society. You know, and I needed to sit my ass in chairs and miss work, and I needed to sit my ass in chairs and miss events, and I needed to sit my ass in chairs and give up the gym, and I needed to learn how to get along with you so that I could develop the courage and the humility to have a job again. You know, and I had to keep recovery priority. You know, and then I found myself at time, it was like, yeah, at lunch, it sounds like you probably ought to go to a meeting, dude. You know, I know you're hungry, but you really ought to go to a meeting. You know, and so those things came about. And I had to get shown, and I had to get taught, and I had to learn how to walk again, right? Just like the rest of us. I had to give up the fatal cool, man, and it was about living or dying, and you still get to choose, you know, you still get to choose. It's one thing to die not knowing, it's another thing to know and then die, you know, because my sponsor tells me, it's like, look, man, every man gets a shot. If he comes to NA, find out why he's here. Give him an opportunity. It might be his last. You know, and there's people around that aren't here because of that. And relapse, right? And there are people that did a lot of work for Narcotics Anonymous that aren't here because of relapse, right? And that idea that, you know what, it's okay, just right now, just one more, you know. And look, man, the fear, I don't think the fear keeps an addict here. I think it might get him here. You know, that was my experience. And something more needs to happen in that beauty that comes from 12-step work. By this time, most of us realize that the only way that we can keep what was given to us is by sharing this new gift of life with the still suffering addict. This is our best insurance against relapse to the torturous existence of using. We call it carrying the message, and we do it in a number of ways. You know, and I thought that was an interruption to my life. And it just turns out that it's been the bright spot. It's an interruption when my ego, right, is trying to take credit for what's going on around me. You know, but it's the therapeutic value of one addict helping another, you know, and it's just kept recovery fresh for me. It's kept it exciting, you know, and I've built the life around me that I really always craved. You know, it allows me to be who I am. It allows me to just be like you instead of, in competition. You know, it's not a race. You know, really what I'd been looking for all along was to just sit down without feeling I had to twitch to do something to make me feel different or feel better, you know. Anyway, this is, it's gone in different directions for me. Practicing spiritual principles in our daily lives leads us to a new image of ourselves. Honesty, humility, and open-mindedness helps us to treat our associates fairly. Our decisions become tempered with tolerance. We learn to respect ourselves. And thank God we do, you know, thank God we do. Thank God that I do get relief when I'm around you, you know, and around this literature. And, something I didn't do for a long time, man. Early on when I got clean, I started running with some fellows that were a little hard, and I called it clean. You know, we didn't do step work. We didn't do any of that shit. We threw people out of their house that owed a brother money and stuff like that, and I was like, yeah, I think there's probably a problem with this. You know, and that had to change, and over time it did, and I used to just hate the hugs, you know, or the, I love you, brother. Like, fucking get real with me. Don't talk like that, you know. And hanging around helped me to see how you love me. Hanging around helped me to see how you love others. And that was something that I was never taught before in Narcotics Anonymous. I heard of it, but I didn't see it. You know, and I got to tell you, I ran to other fellowships and I ran to churches and I ran to different states and I ran up and down the seaboard looking for that thing when it was here all along. You know, it's for real and within balance to let you know I love you. Right. It's allowing you to be freely who you are unconditionally, whatever those experiences are. I'll set the boundary with what I'm comfortable with. You know, I'll set the boundary with what I'm comfortable with. And I hope you do the same with me. Because I don't want you to love me and it be a burden. It's not supposed to be like that, right? Freely give away what was so freely given to me. November 10 of 96. My name is Mark. I am an addict. Thank you for letting me share.